And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willisher, host, and Alejandro Rojas is coming up with UFO updates in just a minute. Our guest this evening is Justin Barber. Now, he's a director for a soon-to-be-released, just in a couple of days, movie called Phoenix Forgotten. It's based on the Phoenix Lights, but, you know, with a lot of twists and turns. It's a fictional movie. So he will be on a little bit later on. I want to thank the people that support the show. You can help us out for $2 or more a month. All that information's on podcastufo.com. Our shows are now on YouTube live stream, and you can watch them actually on Podcast UFO during the show, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And also, we are on the Dark Matter Digital Network on Thursdays from 10 p.m. to midnight. And you can listen to the whole show if you can't support us. And so I think that is going to be it. Oh, yes. And our Everything Else show this coming Monday is with Randall Carlson. So, Alejandro, how are you?
Hello. I am good.
Good. You know, I've watched your... I've watched your Facebook page, and man, you are everywhere on TV, all over the place with beautiful women. My goodness, what's going on?
Well, I've just got a lot of beautiful women that follow me around. I kind of have an entourage. Yeah. Just kidding. Actually, yeah. So I did an interview with this new movie called Phoenix Forgotten that's based on the Phoenix Lights, and they liked me so much that they decided to do to have me work with a promotion company, and they scheduled a bunch of local interviews for me to talk about the Phoenix Lights UFO incident and about how this movie is gonna be out. And so it's kind of cool. So it gives me a chance to kind of promote Open Minds and everything, and then and also share information that people probably don't know about the Phoenix Lights, some of the credibility around the case and how it really is a fascinating case. So it was fun. I have one more to do. Otherwise, yeah, yesterday was a big day. I did a couple, and I've got like most of it posted on my Facebook. There's still a couple links to a couple of the online or the on-camera stuff that I did that I don't have links to yet, but they say they're going to be able to get them. So, yeah, if you go to the Open Minds Facebook or my personal Alejandro Rojas Facebook, you'll find links to watch those interviews. And as you said, it is true that the hosts, the people who interviewed me, actually in all instances, all of the on-screen interviews have been with women hosts who are all very pretty.
Yeah. Well.
And very smart and very nice.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
But one other thing I should say is that this is not the movie that we showed at the UFO Congress last year. So last year, there was a movie called Phoenix Incident that had the same premise. It was about the Phoenix Lights, and these guys go in the desert, and some crazy stuff happens, and it's a found footage. So very, very, very similar. But that one was called the Phoenix Incident, and that one premiered at the UFO Congress last year. This one is similar. I haven't even seen it yet, and it's called Phoenix Forgotten. So the new one, Phoenix Forgotten, which begins on Friday is a different movie.
It's quite a release, though, on this particular one, I believe.
I think so. I think this one's going in theaters as the other one, the year ago, has been online. So you can find like that one on iTunes. The Phoenix Incident has mostly been an online and digital release sort of thing. They're trying new things, and they're going to have a new app out soon for the movie. So you'll have all kinds of extra scenes and stuff that you could do. They're gamers. Actually, it's a game developer who created that movie. So they've been trying new and different things with that movie. But this Phoenix Forgotten, which launches on Friday, I think is going to be more traditional in the movie theaters.
Yeah, kind of thing. Like a scary movie, basically.
It is, yeah, just like the other one. These are both horror movies, so you're not really going to find any history or insight into the Phoenix Lights actual UFO incident in either of these movies, really. But they're thrillers, which are really popular with the kids these
days.
That's
right, that's right. So what is actually going on with UFO news this week?
Yeah, UFOs in the news. Some of the ET type of stuff that has been making news this week has been the search for alien laser signals. Now, we've heard about this before, but there's just kind of a more concerted effort, and there's been more talk about it lately, where these groups have been scanning the skies at different universities around the world, really, to look for photons, so essentially to look for lasers, because they feel it's sort of a SETI effort where they feel that it's a better way to look for alien signals than radio. So that's kind of an interesting thing, and that's gotten quite a few stories out there this week. So it's always fun to see, you know, alien hunters, especially scientists who are looking for aliens, news out there. So, you know, there's been several stories on that. You can find that in our daily UFO headlines. Otherwise, when it comes to UFOs, there's been a couple things. One of them is a video. Now, this one is from Austria, and it is kind of interesting, although this is on the beginning of this video, I kind of feel like you can hear some buzzing or whirring like a drone, but you only hear it for a few seconds at the beginning, and it looks like perhaps that's because one of these lights was going up in elevation, so it wasn't far enough away where you couldn't hear it. It was closer. That's what it kind of appears like, but it's only for a few seconds at the beginning of this video. It's a MUFON video. This was a case submitted to MUFON, and a video. It happened outside of Lower Austria, and this was January 4th, 2017, at about 10:30 p.m. The witness said it was very dark, and they were in a deserted, secluded kind of area when they saw these three lights. Now, some have said it looked triangular, but three lights are always going to be in a triangular formation, unless they're in a line. So, and I think these were all separate objects. And when you see the way they kind of move around, it does seem like that. And they do look to be different colors. So it is kind of interesting that way, too. So the witness actually said that they were kind of scared when they were watching this. Mm. So people have to watch it. Now, I kind of think these might be drones. And I kind of feel like I heard a drone noise at the beginning of the video. If they're not drones, then it is interesting because they are moving around. You know, they're kind of moving around fairly quickly. They're staying like near each other, but just kind of flying around. So, and three drones, you know, some people are saying, well, there's three of them, you know, they're really high. That would be kind of strange. And through most of the video, you can't hear any sound from them. So, it's kind of an interesting video.
Now, do these three lights, do they stay in whatever triangular formation, or does that change it?
No,
it changes.
Not at all. Yeah. It changes. Yeah, they... And that's why I say it looks clear to me that they're moving independently of each other. I don't think that would make sense if they were all attached the way it wouldn't. you know, I don't think that's possible. So, for instance, when one is moving to the left, it moves past the others, where if it were a solid object, it would block the light from the others. So yeah, it is an interesting video, though. So I think people ought to check that one out. Another one that we posted just yesterday, both of these from Roger Marsh, their MUFON cases, is from Philadelphia. And this is a square object. Now, this person took some pictures, and if you zoom in, you can see kind of a square object here. But he said it was a slow-moving, square-shaped object that slowly moved overhead. He was at the corner of Allegheny and Kensington in Philadelphia on April 3rd, 2017. This was at 8 a.m., so it's kind of nice that this is a daylight sighting. But this person thought perhaps it could be debris on an air current, but he said it was moving too steadily and slowly, he felt, to be, just floating on an air current. So it's interesting, and it doesn't seem to be reflective. It doesn't look like a bird. So, this one's hard to say. I guess it could possibly be some kind of black balloon. It's pretty weird. So, yeah.
Have to check that one out.
People have to take a look at this one. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. So is that it for this this session?
That's
all
it.
All right.
Am I missing some big news? Did you hear about
that? No. Just there seems to be a lot going on with the search for extraterrestrials, just in like science news here and there, that it's probably a lot of rehashing. And I know that you look into this a lot more than I do. So I'm sure you're seeing that around.
Yeah. Mostly it's the alien laser thing, which is just getting a lot of people to think. And then, of course, last week we talked about the NASA news around Saturn. Did we talk about that? I think we did.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
And about how they found, essentially these materials spewing out of.
Pardon me. We did. We talked that it was going to happen the day after the show, but we never talked about the results of it.
So let's talk about that. Yeah, so essentially what they found was that, one of Saturn's moons is spewing, they were able to analyze what's coming out of it. And what they were able to find coming out of it is similar to what we have in our oceans that essentially microbes eat off of. And what that means is that it's possible there are microbes in the water. And if there are microbes in the water, that supports a whole ecosystem, because then, plankton or other things feed off of the microbes, and then bigger animals feed off of that. So because they were able to monitor that, it has essentially potential food for microbes in its water, that's another indication that there could be life under the ice of Enceladus. That's the name of the moon, where there's these vast oceans. So very, very interesting.
That is. Now, I wonder if the same detection, the scientific method of the detection of those, I don't want to say elements, but whatever it was that they found, I wonder if they could also see if there was actually microbes present or not.
I don't think so. And the reason I say that is I've interviewed a few of the astrobiologists before, and I've asked them questions like this. And what they say is a lot of this equipment, like the rovers. So unfortunately, if the rovers found something that looked like it may be organic, they don't have the equipment to confirm that, because the equipment they have can analyze like the makeup of something. So for instance, the material, but not necessarily whether or not it's organic or living or not. So essentially, it doesn't seem, at least, like they have the proper equipment on these devices to be able to confirm that or not. I think, so for instance, they would be able to confirm gases or maybe carbon or something like that. But from what I understand, to confirm life, you actually have to get a sample and put it under a microscope. And that will be something they're looking towards in the future. And that's something that, for instance, the rovers just don't have. And it's kind of frustrating because it's one of the things that they would need. And it seems as though it's not until they can confirm that, you know, the molecular structure or the makeup of something looks to be organic, would they even develop the craft to have.
For all we know, there could
microscope
be
microscope to go out.
It could be like squids coming out of this thing or something. You never know.
Yeah. So it would take a long time for them to develop the project and get the spacecraft out there with the proper equipment to be able to confirm life. So even if they see stuff with what they have, that seems pretty, you know, evident that it's life. So for instance, let's say they found some little dead squid on Mars. Maybe all they would be able to do is visually confirm that it looks like it, but they would have to send something else out there to confirm that it was a remnant of life.
Oh wow, so, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's all very complicated.
Yeah, it's not as easy as it seems like they would make it. But anyway, it is what it is. An announcement I did forget to make is our guest this evening, Justin Barber, he's a director. He's not really a UFO type of guy. We're going to be talking about the movie. So in that case, when we're done speaking with him, it's going to be open lines, and I'll have the phone number posted, and I'll also, you can connect with Skype, and I'll talk about that later as we go along. Alejandro, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
All righty, everyone, hang in there for just a minute after this music break. We'll be right back with Justin Barber. How are you, Justin? Welcome to the show. And this movie looks like it's going to be really interesting. I just saw the trailer, but I want to find out a little bit about you, how you got interested and took on a project like this and got involved in all that. So first of all, how did you get interested in this? I mean, you have to have some interest in this topic to work with this. So how did all that happen?
Well, I guess it all started 20 years ago, the night of March 13th, 1997, in Phoenix, Arizona. Some people say hundreds, some people say thousands of people witnessed this formation of lights in the sky that they perceived to be some UFO or alien spacecraft. And I was a high school kid at the time living in Florida, and I remember seeing it on the news. And this was the 90s, and it was like peak X-Files, and I was into all that kind of material. I just really always gravitated towards stories like that, sci-fi stories. And I actually remember writing an article for my high school newspaper about the Phoenix Lights. So anyway, flash forward now 20 years. I started out my career in Hollywood working as a graphics guy, a visual effects artist, a digital effects artist, and I was working alongside this guy named Wes Ball. And we have this other friend from my film school, Florida State, T.S. Nolan. We all went to school together. And one night they were at the office watching that movie Catfish, which was this kind of mockumentary type, I guess, thriller. But anyway, what they liked about that movie was that it was sort of hard to tell if it was a real documentary or if it was staged. And so we're also big fans of the original Blair Witch Project, and we're big fans of Spielberg's Close Encounters. And the original idea for the movie was, let's just make a cool UFO story about these three kids. Let's try to make a cool found footage Close Encounters. And it just, that particular device works really well for this type of story, because it's about a kid who films a UFO and then gets obsessed with it and wants to go film it again. So the camera is particularly an important object in this story for this character. At the time, I had been doing, I got into commercial work. I started directing commercials. And a lot of that work was documentary in nature. And like a typical job for me would be, I would get hired by a company like GE to go make a documentary about a new piece of technology they had. And so Wes and TS thought of me for this movie because they wanted it to be like this documentary that goes off the rails, that has a big twist in the middle and then becomes more of a found footage ride, a sci-fi ride. And that's when they thought I'd be a good fit for the project. And then it was originally just this UFO story, not linked to any real event, but because we wanted it to be a documentary and really nail the authenticity of that, really make something that felt believable, like a contemporary doc, I thought what better way to do that than to set it against something that really happened. So the Phoenix Lights UFO sighting is a real event. But we've invented fictional characters and are telling a fictional story. So for us, it's a backdrop and it's a jumping off point for this sci-fi movie.
So is part of it, is part of the beginning of this actual like footage that was actually filmed back in 1997?
Yeah, that's kind of the what the movie's about in a way. I kind of imagined it this way. The Phoenix Lights is a real event. A lot of people have heard about it. If you Google the Phoenix Lights, you will see this iconic footage of these lights in the sky. And if you've seen the Shyamalan movie Signs, there's that scene where they're watching the news and they see the lights in the sky. And I think that is inspired by the Phoenix Lights event, the real event. That's how iconic it is. But you know, I always wondered, you know, who was the guy who actually shot that footage? I know the footage, but is there a story behind the footage? And we invented this character, Josh Bishop, who, it's actually a little bit autobiographical in that, you know, my main character, Josh, is the same age I was in high school. And so he films the Phoenix Lights and he gets obsessed with it. His footage and his and himself are featured on the local news. And at that point, he gets obsessed with it. He kind of catches the UFO bug and he goes on an adventure to investigate it and film it again. And he ropes in these two kids, these two other friends from high school. So, sorry, I think I went off on a tangent there, but does that answer your question?
Yeah. So, so basically what it sounds like, it's more or less, would you call it a horror, like a horror film, really?
It is. Yeah. It is a horror film.
Which seemed to have a really good success with younger people today. And, you know, one of the things we talk about a lot in the show is how to get younger people more interested in actual sightings. And you're going to have part of a site, you know, part of something that really did happen, which I think is kind of an interesting twist. You know, some people may, when they see based on facts, you know, the type of thing, they may think, well, you know, this person really did go missing. You know, these type of things can't help but happen. But it also could spur someone into really looking at, you know, knowing that this really did happen, looking into it. So I think it's a good thing.
I did put on my documentary filmmaker hat at the beginning of this. I really tried to, you know, treat this as the process as if I was a documentary filmmaker and I was making a doc about this real world event. So I did go to Phoenix. I did a lot of research. I kind of watched everything that was out there about the Phoenix Lights and read a lot. And I did go there and talk to experts and just locals. I did manage to find a couple of people who said they actually saw it.
Oh, you did? So you spoke to some witnesses. Uh-huh. Yep.
I did, yeah. I mean, here's where I break down on the actual event, and that is that I think there's the photographic evidence, and then there's what the eyewitnesses say. And eyewitnesses describe this formation of lights that when it flew over their heads, it appeared to block out the stars behind it. In other words, there was this big dark object, and it had these lights, but they could definitely tell that there was structure there, although they couldn't see it. And it was just massive, and it made no noise whatsoever. But then there's the video and the footage and the stills, And to me, actually, that does just look like military flares, illumination flares dropped from a couple A-10 Warthogs, I think is what they have the official explanation right. is now. When you actually look at the footage from start to finish, it's not as dramatic as it is often made out to be when you see it like packaged in a TV show or a documentary. But that being said, the eyewitnesses don't necessarily describe what I'm seeing in this video or in these stills. So one guy in Phoenix told me his theory is that the flare drop did happen, but it was a diversion from this alien craft that actually was hovering over in the opposite direction. So take that as you will. Really, everybody I talked to had a different theory about what it was or a different opinion.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there is a lot of speculation that's exactly what happened. It was a diversion to drop those flares when they did, because a lot of the footage that you see of the Phoenix lights, like on YouTube, is actually the flares. And that was starting, you know, at I think 10 o'clock when people were actually seeing what is noted as the real Phoenix lights, the crafts. And I say crafts because it seems like there may have been three, but I don't really know, two or three or something like that, possibly. But that started at 8 o'clock. And, you know, flares don't sit around for a couple of hours, for one thing. And so there is a lot of, you know, speculation exactly what that was about. But there was also, you know, this was, I think, I'm trying to remember what the pilot's name was, but actually there is a pilot that actually went out, flew out to take a look at it, and I guess he was really shaken up, you know.
Well, actually, that's not something I came across, but it just goes to show how much material and talking about this event there is and has been over the years. You know, the other thing, too, is that some of the real eyewitnesses I talked to, some were very genuine, and I believe that they believed what they saw and what they described, that I described earlier. But then other people I interviewed who saw it or said they did, it was obvious that their story was changing as I interviewed them. Like just facts didn't remain consistent. And as I got through the interview, I could kind of tell that they were sort of telling a tall tale. So, I mean, there is stuff like that that muddies the waters and also makes you think like, well, it is possible that all these people are just telling a tall tale. Again, it's like the photographic evidence and it's all just the video and then stuff that you hear secondhand. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever know.
Right, really. Right.
At least that's my impression. That's
yes,
my impression,
we had. I just forget her name. I want to say.
Dr. Lynn.
Well, she was on the show. Yes, a few weeks ago, but Barnett, Marsha Barnett. I'm getting two different people confused, but she was actually involved in the government. She took all the calls.
The councilwoman.
Right. She was on the show, and I got a lot of really good feedback. She's really a solid. Really nice lady, but you know, she went through a lot of grief just trying to figure out what this was, and when a lot of people just didn't want to talk about it, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, that is the story I remember that jumps out at me as well as her story. She, you know, represents people that live there, and it's her job to bring their concerns forward. And if they are having this, you know, it's a concerning thing to have happen. And it didn't seem like anybody was taking it seriously or offering a decent response. Cause at first, you know, they didn't come right out and say it was flares. It like, I think they just didn't have any comment.
Yeah.
And then of course you have the story kind of snowballed over time. And then the governor Fife Symington had that press conference where they dressed the guy up in the alien suit. And that was sort of like, I guess, pretty insulting to her. But that's another thing that's interesting about it to me. And maybe just sort of another layer of the mystery is like the Phoenix lights happened in March. And then it's on being talked about on US on Good Morning America, and it's in print in USA Today only in June, much later in that year. Like, why did it take so long to get there? Was it just because the story kept building, or was it that's when they decided to cover it as a distraction from yet something else? That's just that's the other thing I think about. Like another guy, part of the design of the first half of the movie is that. Josh Bishop. Okay, so the movie takes place in two different timelines. It's material from 1997 intercut with modern day material, and so our story is about this kid Josh Bishop who films the Phoenix lights and then weeks later disappears along with two of his friends. But the first half of the movie is told from the point of view of his kid sister, all grown up now, a 26-year-old woman who returns to Phoenix to make her own documentary about her brother's disappearance. And at first, this character doesn't really entertain the idea that Josh got abducted by aliens. To her, it's just more obvious that, well, he got murdered or kidnapped, or they just drove out there and encountered some natural accident, got lost in the desert. And then over the course of the first half of the movie, as she does, she interviews not only family members, but members of law enforcement who helped look for the kids. She starts to go down her brother's rabbit hole a little bit and start to suspect, geez, what if Josh, I sound crazy, but what if Josh did get abducted by aliens? And then at that point, the movie kind of takes a turn.
Wow. No, that sounds great. Now, this is a big, kind of a big budget film, wouldn't you say?
I mean, yes and no. It's like it still cost more than the last movie I was involved with in a big way, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's still nowhere near the scope of what you normally see in a theater. It is more in the vein of these smaller horror budget horror movies and found footage movies. So I definitely was very fortunate that Ridley Scott got involved, and we can release it as largely in such a big way. But it was still a pretty scrappy production.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was talking about, not just the budget itself, but the actual promotion of it. You know, it's funny, I found out about it because someone watched one of my videos on YouTube and then said, hey, this came up as a commercial on your on your YouTube video, and then they sent me the link to the trailer, and I thought, wow. Yeah, cool. So, I mean, the advertisement has been strong, I would say. And
so does that mean you have to treat me as a sponsor of the show?
Right. And then someone in the chat room just wrote that they watched a movie the other night and they saw a big, you know, ad for this coming out. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So,
yeah, we tried to make as good a movie for you guys as we could. It's really inspired by, you know, like I mentioned, Spielberg's Close Encounters, The Blair Witch Project, but also documentaries I love made by filmmakers like Errol Morris and Werner Herzog. So we just tried to kind of do something new with the device and, use this real event, try to treat that delicately as we could, but also then kind of continue the story a little bit and give our take on what we think it might be. And that's eventually what these kids encounter in the desert, which you see at the end of the movie.
Now, I saw in the trailer there's some special effects. Did you have a lot of that in the movie?
We did. I started out my career doing digital effects, and over time, as people came to me to ask me my advice for their own various projects, I started saying, you know what, try not to use a computer. Just try to do it in some practical way like they did in the old days, because it's usually just cheaper, faster, and looks better. And there are, of course, some things you can't do, but with those experiences in mind, I really tried to do as much in the real world as possible, as we say, in camera. And that's the kind of stuff people got excited about, was those old school Close Encounters style effects. So we try to do that as much as possible for the big stuff in the movie, and that also kind of helped make it real for the actors. And then, of course, there are some digital effects, but we just I always try to like start the shot in the real world and then use digital effects as a way to extend something you've already photographed.
Yeah, we actually had Doug Trumbull on this show at one time. He did the special effects for Close Encounters and a number of great movies.
Cool.
Yeah. He's actually into the UFO topic and has built what's called UFOTOG, which is a way to actually detect UFOs. It started out, it was all this equipment in a Hummer that used to drive out into, you know, areas where there may be sightings or something like that. But now he has these little platforms himself and Mark D'Antonio are putting together to put these little units all over, detectors, UFO detectors all over the place.
That's great.
That should be interesting.
I saw on Reddit the other day some test footage from a new night vision camera that it looks plain. It looks bright as day, but it's the middle of the night and all the stars are just blazing in the sky. And I think the first question somebody put on there was like, hey, do you think we can use this for UFO hunting?
Yeah. Well, you know, the one problem I have to say with night vision and UFOs, you see a lot of things at night that really... for instance, insects, you can pick up an insect at night. And I was out in Phoenix a few years ago and was using Ben Hansen's night vision and saw a bat. And the bat looked like a UFO because they move so erratically, you know. I mean, and so I think you can pick up a lot of, yes, they're UFOs because you don't know what they are, but not real UFOs, basically. Yeah,
for sure.
So you got to be use caution when you're using that. Now, when you were doing the research, you said you actually went to Phoenix. So you get pretty deeply into what actually happened, and then just you did a documentary on basically that, right? And then how does it fall into the found footage from there?
Well, really what I did a couple trips there on my own as just research, but basically I have these characters in the movie, and in 1997, Josh is the kid behind the camera making his own documentary as a high school student might. And then in modern day, his sister, all grown up, is making a documentary as a 25-year-old young filmmaker would make. I kind of modeled her on other documentary filmmakers I know in real life. And the style of her movie is in the style of like Making of a Murderer. It's contemporary, there's editing, there's music. But in terms of making the movie, I essentially just, here's a good example. So Sophie in modern day, she interviews a private investigator in Phoenix who the family had hired to look into Josh's disappearance once the official search was called off. And I found a real private investigator in Phoenix, and I made him a fake case file with the characters in the movie and what happened to them and all the evidence that was found by the police. I told him to study it. And then on the day, Sophie, played by Florence Hartigan, she just played the character and sat next to the camera and interviewed the real private investigator. And he used what he studied, but also applied his own law enforcement experience. And then that footage is in the movie. So you see this kind of Errol Morris style interview with this guy. And then there's also a search and rescue pilot we did in that way. And then in 1997, one of the first things Josh does after the Phoenix Light sighting is that he and his friend Ashley, they go interview a couple of local astronomers. Mm-hmm. And I found these two guys living in Phoenix, and they form they're members of the Phoenix Astronomical Society.
Wow.
I think one was the treasurer and the other one was the editor, Mike and Don. And these are the kind of guys that when you see something weird in the sky, they're the ones who get the phone call, you know, like when somebody calls in whoever reporting that they see something weird in the sky, they call the astronomers and they debunk it or say it's a weather balloon or whatever. But anyway, I did a scene in 1997 where Josh and Ashley, my actors playing those characters, go interview these two astronomers. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so that was all kind of in an effort to just bring a lot of realism to that first half of the movie.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And of course, they say that the Phoenix Lights was military flares.
Ah, right, right. You want to go the other way? The other way. I'm sorry. Toward the bicycle. Yeah,
oh,
toward
sorry.
The bicycle. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, just trying to line you up here. And so, wow, that's interesting. That must have. It's really good if you can get someone, especially someone that is actually in the field, like a real detective or someone like that. I mean, they just play the part so naturally.
Completely.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to see it. My son and I will probably go check it out. It sounds interesting, and I'm sure it's in the Boston area.
Yeah, it's definitely, I was born in Boston, actually, but it's definitely a good father-son movie. The dad, played by Clint Jordan, is one of my favorite characters. He just gives an amazing performance. And I think it's like those great Spielberg movies. They have just enough family drama and just enough sort of interpersonal drama to really have you invest in the characters, so that then when you go on this kind of genre ride and you have these more tense scenes later, hopefully those are more impactful because you care about the characters. So I hope you enjoy yourself.
Yeah,
like it.
Yeah. Now, had you had any interest? You kind of mentioned you had some interest in like Close Encounters and things like that. Had you ever? Someone always asks this in every show. Just about, have you ever had any type of UFO sighting yourself or anything like that?
Yeah, I have one story, I guess. So basically what happened was I was in the Drakensberg Mountains in South Africa, which is a really remote region, with my brother, and we were staying in this little cabin. And he had gone to sleep one night, and I was awake reading. And suddenly a bright light shone into the room. There was one window, and it had sheer curtains on it, so I couldn't quite see outside, but it was thin enough that light could penetrate. This bright light shone in, and it was definitely coming from an elevated vantage from above. And it shone in the room, and at first it did appear to be stationary, but then the light shifted because I distinctly remember the shadows on my brother's face moving. But I don't remember hearing, and then it was gone, and I hustled my brother awake, but by the time he woke up, it was all normal.
That's always the way.
Yeah. At the time, I don't remember hearing a truck. I don't remember hearing a helicopter. You know, and years later, I wonder if maybe I just didn't hear it. But, you know, it could have also been like, it wasn't raining that night, but it could have been like ball lightning, I guess, or like a meteor explosion that lit up the whole sky. Mm-hmm. But that's my little story. And then the cool thing about this movie is that a lot of people kind of have a story like that. And among the cast and the crew, we all got to share our little campfire stories about UFOs as we were making the movie. And a lot of them actually made it into the movie as scenes or in one way.
Oh, that's
another.
A great idea. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Yeah. When I've been at this since, I don't know, 2011. And whenever the topic comes up in, you know, mixed company, I should say, and I'm not usually the one to bring it up, you know, somehow. If someone sees that I do the show or something online or whatever, you know, that's how a lot of times it, but I don't normally talk about, you know, doing this show to just anyone out there. But and because of the silly ridicule factor, you know, I'm a professional too. You know, I'm also, you know, in the fine arts and the antiques and things like that. But anyway, when it does happen to come up, it's almost like every other person has had something happen, you know, that's unexplainable or they think is unexplainable. Maybe it's not unexplainable, but according to them, you know, so it's not the foolish thing as it used to be anyway.
That's kind of my observation as well. It just seems, maybe it's a generational thing, but definitely more, I don't know, maybe it's just I've only been in certain circles, but I have not quite encountered as much of that sort of scoffing and ridicule about UFOs as sort of is classically talked about, like when you watch older genre movies. I don't know if that's just because more and more younger generations are conditioned by sci-fi.
Yeah.
Or some people will tell you it's because they're intentionally conditioning us for the invasion event, you know? But yeah, that is my observation as well. It's just a lot of people have seen something.
Yeah. Well, I do think in a way that I think we are being conditioned by science, you know, basically because of all the, you know, the, Earth-like planets that are found and all the possibilities, and recently the possibility of, you know, the moon on Saturn we talked about in the news earlier, that's spewing out this liquid very similar to what supports microbes in our own ocean. So, you know, I mean, I think we are being conditioned by science, and I think, you know, I actually do think that my personal thoughts are that I think that we are being visited because there's just so many unexplained things happening, but I don't have any idea who we're being visited by. Now, with that being said, I think that, you know, overall we are being conditioned because by science we may find out the real proof that there is extraterrestrial life. As far as physical evidence that we find here by someone visiting us, it's been elusive so far. And speaking to other scientists about that topic, they say, unless you give me a hubcap off of a flying saucer, I'm not going to, you know, believe that they're actually here, yeah. You know. But physical yeah. evidence.
What Mike, one of the astronomers, said. The astronomers I interviewed and that are in the movie were very skeptical about the Phoenix Lights. They seem to think that they are military flares. However, they themselves did have experience of seeing something in the sky that they couldn't quite explain. But Mike, what he brought up was, yes, if they are out there, it's more likely that they are our distant descendants, time travelers, or interdimensional beings. That could be just as likely to him than another race having to traverse the immensity of the universe to come to us.
Yeah.
So, or it's some, you know, another couple of movies I love from back in the day around the time that X-Files, you know, it's funny, the 90s was sort of like it all got very popular there for a second, at least it seemed to me. But I read a book by a guy named Whitley Strieber, I think, called Communion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's that Christopher Walken movie where that he plays the guy who gets abducted by aliens. And there's this one terrifying scene where he wakes up in the middle of the night and he sees the gray alien just kind of peekaboo behind the dresser or whatever it is. And then there's Fire in the Sky, which is a great abduction movie, but also what I've been told is not at all close to that guy's actual story, although it's based on a real event. So in terms of the abduction phenomena, I'm also sort of on the fence, like I'm waiting for proof, but there are so many people kind of having these experiences. I guess my thing about that, since I've been asked, we've made a movie about alien abduction, in terms of my real opinion, I think it's just as likely everyone's having maybe some sort of collective psychological experience more so than there's aliens coming.
Yeah, I'm
here.
I'm gonna get hate again, mail for you saying that. No, I'm just really? Kidding. Okay. I understand what you're saying, and you know, when you do take cases like Travis Walton and Fire in the Sky. You know, I've spoken to Travis many times. He's been a guest a number of times, and I've talked to him in person about that whole situation. And he said that he would rather the movie had been made the way it was made than not made at all, because there was a lot of things that were held close to the truth. But, you know, the thing about him, you know, being on, you know, waking up in this, like, cocoon type thing and stuff like that, that, you know, that never happened. But there are a number of things that did happen, but he just didn't have any control over it.
And we kind of wrestled with that a little bit personally as well, in that, like, you mentioned Dr. Cuddy was on your show. So Dr. Cuddy is a woman who's made a documentary about the Phoenix Lights called The Phoenix Lights that you can find on Amazon. And it's just straight up documentary. It's not fictionalized at all. And so I, you know, here I am, this is a real event, you know, like we were talking about with the city councilwoman, people take it really seriously. And then here I am making a movie really to be consumed as entertainment, and where I'm now inserting fictionalization into this real world event. And so should I feel like I'm doing them a disservice because of that? And then in reality, Dr. Kaidi, I talked to her in the course of working on this movie, and I did license some material from her documentary, certain shots that are in my movie as well. So in the end, she was supportive, I guess. But yeah, I guess it's, I don't know. That was just something that we wrestled with a little bit here as well. Is like, is it ethical really?
So
I did it anyway.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So you're thinking basically that it might muddy the waters of the true event. Is that what you're,
I'm surprised that Travis would have that opinion, I guess. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Well,
like if it was me,
well, there was another movie that was made, you know, it's an online movie. That was made about, you know, the Phoenix Lights. It kind of had like found footage and all that, you know. So, you know.
Yeah, there are, that being said, that, you know, there are movies have been made about the Phoenix Lights that are fictional, and some of them are also found footage. And I did watch a lot of found footage movies in preparing to make this movie, like the paranormal movies and the original Blair Witch. I intentionally avoided watching other Phoenix Lights movies. Mm-hmm. Although I have seen those trailers, and I think ours is pretty different. And I guess what I have to say is, like, there's Armageddon and there's Deep Impact, and I like both. There's room for both. And this is kind of what our take is on the Phoenix Lights. And I think our characters are pretty unique. So, you know, I hope people like both of them,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Well, and had you looked into other UFO sightings as well? Do you have an interest in UFOs, you know, in general?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was growing up in Florida, South Florida, but you always heard about Breeze, which is a little town in the Panhandle, very close to where I went to school. I went to school in Tallahassee, Florida, which is in the Panhandle. So you could drive over to Gulf Breeze and hang out, which I did a couple times, just like on road trips with friends, you know, and that was sort of exciting. It's like you find, you know, it's that situation where you go to college and you lose all your high school friends. And some of the first people I met and was able to talk to were just other X-Files fans. So it was cool to just take little road trips out to Gulf Breeze. We never saw anything, though, but always wanted to. But other than that, now I live in the Southwest, and the American Southwest is a great place for UFO sightings.
Yeah.
One thing they say about Arizona is, you know, there's a lot of military bases there because they do a lot of aerial testing because the skies are so clear and it's so big and open and flat, and there's less clouds, so it's an ideal place to test aircraft. But in that same sense, you can just see a lot of the sky. And so the further west I come in America, the more UFO stories I hear. And in making this movie, not only did I go to Phoenix and, you know, investigate the Phoenix Lights as best as I could, but and we did shoot in Arizona for a little bit, but we shot mostly in California. But I was able to go out to Southern California. There was a state park called Anza Borrego State Park, and that's where we shot some of the daytime desert exteriors. It's just a really beautiful, desolate desert landscape, and it looks more like the Arizona desert than places closer to Los Angeles. But we stopped at a gas station down there and tried to interview some just people on the street about their own UFO experiences. And we did talk to a couple of guys who had seen stuff locally. And supposedly there's a place called Palomar Mountain, which is in Southern California, that there is an observatory on top of. But this one guy I was talking to swears that if you go up there any night of the week, you'll be able to see something. It's just kind of a little local UFO hotspot, he said. And I've yet to go out there, but that's kind of like next time I'm in the area, I'll definitely try swing by. Yeah.
You know, there are the hotspots is one of the things that is kind of unexplainable all by itself. And I know that the Phoenix area, you know, that's not the only time they have actually seen a large triangle over Phoenix. And there's been many sightings. There's I think the 2005, there was quite a sighting there too. You just don't hear about it as much.
Yeah, I did aggregate as much material as I could and about the Phoenix lights, just like in terms of news clips. And it was cool to see every couple of years there was some more hype or there was another sighting. Sometimes it was every time the anniversary would roll around, they would run local news reports about it again. But then there were a couple times where something similar was seen. And that's what gives the Phoenix lights, I think, that urban legend kind of quality, the fact that, you know, maybe every now and then it comes back.
Yeah.
And then, what is the thing about the triangle shape is a common thing. It's like one of the guys I talked to at that gas station in Southern California, he described driving through an area that's very desolate. It's a place where people go like four-wheeling and off-roading. And he's driving down this highway, desert highway at night, and he saw two big black triangle forms moving around as if they were looking for something.
Wow.
In the desert. And so
Were they almost sitting still? A lot of times you hear about triangles just sitting, you know, just barely moving. Is it?
He described them essentially as I did. He seemed to describe them like moving slowly as if they were scanning, you know, as if they were looking for something. He did. So it was moving, but it wasn't like flying around the way a stealth fighter would or anything.
You know, it's funny. I was involved on a show recently with a friend of this show, Jordan Bonaparte, up in Canada. There was the James Blackwood sighting up in Nova Scotia, where there was an amazing UFO. I think it was back in 1975, and that's the constable that was the main person, James Blackwood, said it looked like it was searching for something. You know, he basically said the same thing. It was almost like sitting in one spot and just like moving around and, you know, spinning around, almost like it was searching for something. So you do hear of those bizarre things. The triangles are something else. It just, you know, people are speculating that they're advanced military. I don't know about that. It just seems, you know, is it possible it could be hidden for so long because there's sightings all the way back, you know, literally back 100 years, but, you know, a lot of sightings all the way back into the 70s. Could something like that be hidden this long? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, that same guy who described to me seeing those two black triangle forms, he also told a different story. He was working at a golf course, and he saw a crowd of people kind of crowded around part of the green, and he walks over to them, and he realizes they're all looking up into the sky. And he looks up, and he sees, he describes, something that looked like an angel, and he described it as dancing around up there, as if it was playing. He specifically said it felt like it was playing. He said it was very, very high up, but they thought they could make out like a humanoid form and wings. Wow. And it danced around playing. And there were other people looking at this, he said. And then it just went up, 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 and it was gone.
Yeah, there's so many unexplained things in this world. You know, I do another show as well, and I'm going to be looking a little more into that. But there are just so many things. And, you know, I've had this conversation before. Sometimes the more bizarre it is, almost the more believable it is. You know, I mean.
Well, that's the challenge, though, too, is like that guy felt very genuine to me. But, you know, at the end of the day, was it a plastic bag? Like, could have been. Right?
mean, yeah. Like, you know, 90% of these things are explainable. And, you know, a plastic bag in New York City, they say that, you know, a lot of the sightings that are seen in the city are actually plastic bags flying around. There's a lot of wind currents between the buildings and things like that. So that does happen quite often. But so after this movie, let's just say it's a great success, you do really well, are you going to try to keep in this same type of genre? Are you going to, do you have anything else in mind for the future?
Yeah, I've been definitely thinking about it. I have a couple stories kicking around. I've definitely come up with a couple. You know, you start exploring this device for one project, it just sticks in your brain a little bit. So, like what is the cryptozoology version of this movie that can be told in a similar device? You know, like that's something I've been thinking about. Not necessarily a Bigfoot movie, but that's just kind of also a sort of hobby of mine. It's like, I love the Bigfoot subreddit. But you could do a movie where it's like, they're finally trying to get proof and they set up all these cameras, and then you explore, you know, a story about some characters getting lost in the woods and finding something that way. And then on the other hand, I just love, you know, I love a good adventure. I love a good yarn. And I don't think you necessarily have to use this device in order to do that. But I'm always drawn to, I am drawn to these types of stories, like adventure stories and sci-fi stories. So if this movie, if enough of your viewers see this movie as well, then there's a chance we could do a sequel. So let's keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah. They always say the sequel's not as good as the first one, right? So you got to really, you got to break that mold, really.
Yeah, I would argue that there's some good ones.
Yeah, there are a few. You know, yeah,
but yeah, they can't. It's hard to find one that can stand on its own for sure. But yeah, that is the case. That's the danger.
Yeah. Well, I think we're gonna call it here, and I'm gonna say thanks so much for joining the show. And so, listeners, people that are listening right now, I'm gonna ask you to start calling in. I'll put that screen up. I want to thank you so much, and I wish you all the success in the world. With the show, I hope it does. Hope it does really well for you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and everyone who's listening. We try to make as good a movie as we could for you. And if anything I said offended you, I apologize. I'm honestly very open minded about it all. I just tend to, like I think I said earlier, I've become a little bit more like Dana Scully than Fox Mulder as I've gotten older. So thanks,
yes.
Everybody.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot, and take care now. All right. Okay, everyone. So I would love for you to call in or Skype in if you would. The numbers are up on the screen. This is, of course, for the live show only. And that number is 603-967-4030. Or you can Skype in at Marty Willis. That's MartyWillis. I have no idea why I named it Marty Willis. I don't call myself Marty, but I guess it wasn't taken, so I grabbed that number. So anyone that wants to call in, please do so. Again, the number is up on the screen. You can see it if you're watching live on YouTube right now. Would love to either get your opinion of the idea. There was a couple in the chat room that wasn't too happy about it, or one at least. And I understand that the possibility of muddying the water of you know, a true event. I actually also think it's kind of an interesting idea, because as I said in the show early on, it may make younger people decide to actually look into the topic a little more, which may cause them to be interested in the topic totally. So anyway, looking for your call, 603-967-4030, or Skype, Marty Willis. And if I don't hear from anyone, we'll probably stop the show a little bit early, or I do have someone I can probably call here. So looking for that call. Anyone that wants to call in, talk about our guest or about a sighting you had, anything, it's up to you. Feel free to call in. And I'm not gonna hold out too long if we don't have any interested callers. I totally understand, last minute type of thing here. So do call in if you'd like.
Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
Thank you, Simone.
No problem whatsoever.
Well, I had to add a little bit of humor to that. And I'm sorry, I did have a backup, but he didn't answer, and that's too bad. But anyway, I apologize to the supporter that this is not a two-hour show. And next week's guest has not been confirmed yet. So if you'd like to find out who that is, I send out an email blast every Wednesday morning that has the guest announced. So, and it's also on my website every Sunday. So that guest will be posted there. Oh, the week after that, I'm going to be down in Connecticut with Mark D'Antonio on site. He built an observatory. We're going to do the show live from there. All right, so thanks so much, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.